Welcome to the Geneva Peace Week podcast series, a project of the Geneva Peacebuilding Platform. Geneva Peace Week was founded on the core belief that each person, actor, and institution has a role to play in building peace and resolving conflict. Geneva Peace Week is an annual forum in the peacebuilding calendar that includes ceremonies, high-level panels, policy briefings, workshops, videos, podcasts, and other special events. These free contributions are hosted by different organizations and actors around the world. This year, Geneva Peace Week celebrates its 10th anniversary and is held from the 30th of October to the 3rd of November, 2023. For more content, join us at the Geneva Peace Week or online at www.genevapeaceweek.ch.
Good. With that intro, I welcome you to today's Geneva Peace Week, a digital series podcast. My name is Pelle Lutkin. I'm an advisor on governance and peacebuilding with the UNDP Global Policy Network, the team for conflict prevention, peacebuilding, and responsive institutions. I want to welcome you to our podcast, where we discuss the role that effective multi-level governance plays to address people's needs and the objective of promoting trust, strengthening social contract, and sustaining peace in fragile and conflict-affected settings. This episode is part of the Geneva Peace Week 2023 digital series. Our title for the podcast today is From Local to Global Governance. It's a UNDP podcast on how multi-level governance can contribute to crisis recovery and sustaining peace. I'll start us off with our kickoff question for today, which is, why is multi-level governance critical in the context of crisis recovery? Now, what we've seen increasingly during the intersecting crises of the past years is that one of the ways that public institutions can innovate to address complex challenges is to strengthen multi-level governance. While this is not a novel idea, this is a perspective that we consider largely under-examined and underutilized in terms of addressing challenges related to crisis response and recovery. To ensure that UNDP and other development partners are equipped to support peace and sustainable development in program countries, it became in the last couple of years a priority for us to design new ways of harnessing effectively and systematically the multi-level dynamics within governance systems that we support in a multitude of other ways. This demand for supporting responsive multi-level governance, MLG, is especially valid in crisis settings where government capacity tends to be low and social contracts tend to be frail. A renewed and more systematic focus on multi-level governance has, in our view, the potential to help shift the focus of policy and program support towards more networked ways of working, towards recognizing that the boundaries between local, national, regional, and global are all much more fluid than they used to be. The concept of multi-level governance comprises a wealth of state and non-state actors located at different tiers of the governance system, such as the local or subnational, the national, the regional, and the global or the supranational. Now, the challenge for these diverse levels of a governance system is to align and rally around collective priority setting and rally around the design and not least implementation of policy and programming, which ultimately must deliver on priorities of local communities. As such, supporting multi-level governance in more targeted ways has, in our view, the potential to strengthen the effectiveness of existing and new governance models and programs. However, to do this, we need new methods as well as new power sharing incentives that can facilitate bottom-up participation, as well as strong links and policy coherence between both vertical and horizontal levels of governance. So on that backdrop, and here we start getting into the tangible content for today, we have taken steps to promote multi-level governance approaches in crisis-affected settings by developing two key products. One is an MLG, a multi-level governance research report, which consolidates thinking around the definition of MLG, the role of MLG in promoting rights-based and particular participatory approaches to governance and conflict prevention. This report is rooted in evidence from a set of case studies from across all regions. The second product is an MLG toolkit for government institutions and other development partners with innovative approaches for fomenting collaboration across tiers of the national and local governance systems. The tools developed and compiled in the toolkit are rooted in human-centered design thinking and other social innovation approaches to co-creating new instances of participatory decision-making, programming, and policy development. We'll hear much more about these two products today. We will also hear more about the underlying case material, which includes key learnings from both what we can call country settings and from what we call borderlands regions, where development and crisis recovery challenges, for example, around displacement, cross-border trade, etc., are shared across national borders, and where fledgling collaboration mechanisms are being put in place across national borders. Today, we will in particular hear about lessons from Ukraine and from the Lake Chad region. So with this, let's hear from our distinguished guests today. We have with us Mizuho Yokoi, stabilization advisor with UNDP, with experience from a range of different crisis settings, including the Lake Chad region, which we'll hear a lot about today. We have with us Federica Dispensa, community security and recovery specialist with UNDP in Ukraine. Federica also brings experience from multiple crisis response and recovery settings, but we'll today mainly focus on the ongoing work in Ukraine. We have with us Michael Breen, PhD and lecturer in public policy at the School of Social and Political Sciences of the University of Melbourne. And finally, we have with us Jan Schroeder, managing partner of Minds and Makers, a leading German social innovation agency with focus on service design and design thinking. Now, our first topic for today is this discussion of effective multi-level governance and needed policies in fragile and conflict-affected settings, with input by researchers and lead authors of our new Lessons Learned Review and Hands-On Toolkit. My first question goes to you, Michael. Michael, you led the research on lessons learned from multi-level governance in different fragile, conflict-affected contexts and countries. What were some of the main findings? And was there anything in particular that surprised you? Over to you, Michael.
Yep. Thanks, Pelle, for the question. It's been a fascinating research project to work on with a wide variety of cases and issues to consider. As you mentioned, my research was based around case studies across different UNDP regions, including Uzbekistan, Iraq, Nepal, and the Mandera Triangle, which is a cross-border region, including territory in Kenya, Somalia, and Ethiopia. One initial challenge was understanding what multi-level governance or MLG means in a practical sense for the UNDP. So for example, the OECD, the World Bank, the European Union, they all have their own definitions and own approaches to MLG. But the UNDP works in different contexts and with different priorities. And so this difference should inform how we understand MLG and what the focus of our supports should be. Fundamentally, the UNDP, through its work on fragile and conflict-affected states, is working in states in transition. And so it is these ideas that led the identification of different types of MLG, and therefore the priorities and emphases that UNDP country offices can apply. Furthermore, MLG systems themselves, so the systems, are in a state of transition too. And in fact, none of the cases that I looked at could be said to have fully fledged MLG systems in place. There was a lot of variation, a lot of evolution, and a lot of gaps as well. So I identified four different types, and the priorities and challenges follow from those. So democratizing sort of types, where MLG systems are being developed as part of democratization programs, obviously. Federalizing types, where MLG systems are institutionalized through federal structures and processes. Conflict resolving, where MLG is focused on sharing power following peace settlements. And modernizing, where traditional forms of governance are being superseded or integrated or updated by multi-level governance practices. So these are not mutually exclusive, of course, but they do come with their own set of challenges and lessons, and you'll be able to see those in quite some detail in the report. For example, with democratizing types of MLG, then there needs to be a focus on incorporation of citizen-centric forms of governance, on building and strengthening participatory approaches, and enhancing systems for accountability and transparency. In federalizing approaches, decentralization and the devolution of real decision-making power in lower levels of government is a key priority, which needs to be supported by legal frameworks and capacity building to support that devolution of power and responsibility. In particular, focus on intergovernmental forums and intergovernmental institutions. Some of the cases that I looked at, intergovernmental institutions were entirely absent. And federalism is about self-rule and shared rule. And shared rule was in some cases absent. Conflict-resolving types. So integrating or creating space and linkages for ex-warring parties in new and reformed systems of governance. And then finally, modernizing. So for example, updating some undesirable practices such as gender discrimination and then incorporating into or alongside new forms of democratic governance. But to pick up on the idea of MLG systems also being in transition, it's important to think about MLG as being problem-based as well as being system-based. So I applied a concept of an instance of MLG as distinct from a system. And so this is very process-oriented and problem-oriented. So you look at particular problems or issues and see how MLG was part of the response, what parts worked, what parts didn't, what was absent, what can be improved. So MLG often occurs in an ad hoc way, and those responses, which in a crisis are often required to be rapid and consequential, give us a window into what kinds of processes and underlying structures are most conducive to crisis response and where real decision-making powers lie. So structures and processes need to be flexible and adaptable. They need to be specific and fit for purpose, but they also need to be based on well-developed relationships and well-developed underlying structures and systems. And where those relationships and systems are absent or weak, then in response to a crisis, I find that you see a greater disconnection between central and local levels in particular. You see this trend towards centralization, but you also see this trend towards localization. And so you end up having things pull in opposite directions, and you see a greater separation between local issues, between local levels and central levels. As for what it surprised me, the level of public participation actually did surprise me. It was quite high, despite conflicts and crises. MLG, you know, fundamentally includes this dimension of community and non-government functions. And despite the transitioning nature that I've mentioned and the often weak state in several of the countries, efforts to involve the public were really quite high. And this was surprising and pleasing. In fact, in many cases, public participation and the non-government sector was active because the state was weak. It's not the state that's strengthening those factors, but you get this kind of bottom-up effect. And I found that in some states, it's stronger. This level of public participation and non-government actors are stronger in states in crisis than they are in many developed democratic states, stable states, like Australia, for example. But having said that, it's important to make participation consequential. And I found changes in mindset also to be needed. So states are often transitioning away from authoritarian top-down approaches to decision-making and to more collaborative and coordinated approaches. But it's a slow and hard process to both instill this culture of collaboration amongst decision-makers and the public sector who are used to particular ways of working, and also the public who are used to their views not necessarily being meaningful at the higher level. So people need to know that participation is meaningful, and to enable this, the state needs to be more transparent and accountable to make MLG more effective. Finally, I'd like to mention the importance of traditional leadership and the role and their role. So those states that are modernizing are tending to move away from empowerment of traditional or customary leaders. But I found that in several cases, this was counterproductive It creates spoilers and to an extent disrespects the traditions of different places. Having said that, it's easy to see, or it's apparent how difficult and how risky this can be when sometimes traditional leaders can be dangerous, corrupt, or predatory. But the challenge is to reform those negative elements of traditional and customary leadership, to recognize it as part of the transition, and to integrate it in constructive ways into MLG systems. That's easier said than done, of course, but I see this as a central challenge of many of these modernizing states and states affected by crisis. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael, for sharing some of your key findings with us from this process, and from which, of course, will be featured prominently in the upcoming lessons learned report. Now, let me switch to you, Jan. Jan, you led the development of a hands-on toolkit that will help UNDP country offices and other development partners to design more effective projects and programs to strengthen multi-level governance in fragile and conflict-affected settings. Based on this framework, this toolkit, what are the key steps and components for such projects, and how will the toolkit help forge a different way of working on multi-level governance?
Yeah, thanks, Pelle, for the question. Thanks for having me. First of all, I have to say that we didn't design the toolkit as a step-by-step guide. And this is, I guess, also connecting to what Michael just said. So in the case studies that we research, we also researched 5 case studies. And also in the co-creative sessions in which we developed and tested the toolkit, we have observed that we need to offer an iterative approach to develop multi-level governance systems. And this is especially important in order to constantly adapt to the changing constellations, the changing power structures, the changing issues and challenges that are typical for fragile and conflict-affected situations. And what we've also seen, I guess, is also what you observed, Michael, is we have seen a variety of development processes and stages of maturity in which programs find themselves in the implementation of multi-level governance systems. And we decided that the toolkit therefore should provide guidance in form of mindsets, knowledge, and tools that can be applied wherever practitioners are in their programming processes, and also whatever process they're applying. But in order to give orientation on what to do to implement multi-level governance, we derived cross-cutting challenges from the case study research that serve as an entry point to the knowledge and tools the toolkit offers practitioners. And let me give you a quick overview over the key challenges that we identified in our research. So we identified nine cross-cutting challenges that can be summarized into 3 broader categories. So the first category is utilize and build capacity for multi-level governance implementation. And this addresses the capacities that need to be used or built to enable multi-level governance approaches. What we have seen is that often actors are not used to participatory approaches, especially in crisis situations. And it is important to first create demand and then build the capacity for participatory multi-level governance. We also have seen, and I guess it's also something that you mentioned, Michael, that's leveraging on existing infrastructures, for example, developed relationships or existing networks, existing governance mechanisms, can be very helpful and prove particularly valuable in emergency situations where you have limited time and resources to establish such multi-level governance systems or instances, maybe. I guess it's a better word. So the second category is construct and maintain legitimacy for multi-level governance efforts. And this addresses the issues of accountability and legitimacy of multi-level governance activities, and also related efforts that aim at building trust, fostering participation, and also avoiding the alienation of stakeholders. And in crisis situations, we can observe that there is a disrupted trust between different parties, so for example, between authorities and citizens. And we have seen in our cases that we research is that participatory and inclusive approaches can help strengthen social cohesion and reestablish trust. So especially inclusive approaches can help to involve the numerous marginalized and vulnerable target groups that are often observed in this conflict and crisis situations and are therefore of particular importance. And the third category is establish and develop relations between multi-level governance instances. And this is addressing the relationships between stakeholders at different levels of governance that need to be established, understood, and strengthened in order to create a functioning MLG system. And there we are focusing on the establishment of multi-level governance instances between local and higher tier levels of governance. It's also important to keep in mind that these kind of instances need to be adaptable to changing environments and also to take into account the sharing and transferring of ownership in order to ensure sustainability of efforts. So I also want to give you a brief insight and overview into the tools and how to use them. So what kind of guidance does the toolkit offer? So based on these challenges, which, as I already said, serve as the entry point to the knowledge that we provide in the toolkit provides different forms of guidance on how to tackle these challenges. It provides insights on the challenge, reflective questions, and illustrative examples from the cases that we researched. The challenges are also directly linked to concrete tools provided as ready-to-use templates that basically form the center of this toolkit, because it should be practical and action-oriented. The tools were designed to be applicable at different stages of program development, as I pointed out in the beginning, and also should be able to be used for different setups. So they could be used in co-creative setups involving different stakeholders, but it could also be used in setups that are purely internal, or even where you just fill in first information and then verify or validate information later on with stakeholders. So to give you an example of a tool, so one tool that we designed is the multi-level governance system map. This is a tool that can be used to analyze an existing governance system, could also be used to prototype new governance element or to monitor new implemented governance structures. So you see that the toolkit the tools are applicable in different phases of policy development programs. And the system map visualizes different types of actors, institutions, and infrastructures from different level: government, civic society, private businesses, also UNDP, and also at different governance level, as you already pointed out, on local, subnational, national, and supranational levels. The relationships between the different actors are defined. So you can identify both existing but also missing links, it's very important in the analysis of multi-level governance systems. And the most relevant governance mechanisms can also be documented and analyzed using this tool. And this way, the tool helps to solve different challenges described in the toolkit. For example, you can identify existing structures and leverage these structures, or you can identify missing cross-level links and then improve these links. So this tool can reply or help you with diverse challenges that we came across in our research. And the tools, maybe to give you a bit of an insight, so how these tools should be accessible and usable for practitioners in the country offices and on the side of the government institution. So the tools are provided as templates on a digital whiteboard And this way, users can easily adapt the tools if necessary, which is very important. What we see in toolkits, that you can adapt the tools to your purpose. And you can also directly set up co-creative session, online sessions to involve relevant stakeholders from different governance levels. But if individual usage of the tool is not possible, for example, due to a lack of digital skills or also internet connectivity that you sometimes see in fragile settings, the tools or elements can also be downloaded as a PDF file and printed so that you can use it in a more analogous way. And such, we make it more accessible for different target groups. And this is basically in a nutshell how we decided to design toolkit based on the evidence from the case studies and also from the co-creative sessions that we had with diverse experts from the field. Thanks, Pelle.
Thank you, Jan, for sharing details and some examples. There's plenty of other tools in the toolkit, but some of the examples, just to give a flavor. Of this upcoming toolkit to support policy development and particular programming around multi-level governance in crisis-affected settings. We'll shift gears a little bit to a conversation around experiences, practical, tangible experiences of multi-level governance programming in different countries and regions. By inviting some of our colleagues and practitioners to reflect on their experiences with this in this area of work, and I'll go to you, Mizugo, and ask you a little bit about your efforts, your experiences leading stabilization efforts in different conflict-affected settings, and in particular, if you can share with us what role multi-level governance, in your view, plays for stabilization efforts in one or more of the settings where you have worked, and generally, how do you see multi-level governance reflected in some of the development projects that you're most familiar with, if at all. Over to you.
Thank you, Pelle. So let me begin to talk about what level of the governance we're talking about. As Michael and Jan talked about, like the multi-level governance, particularly for the peace building perspective, we can mainly think about five different levels. The first one can be community, and the second could be the state or sub-national level, the third national level, and the regional or cross-country level and global. And this is very important to understand that the causes and impact of the conflict or violence go beyond one particular level of governance. To look at the conflict in Gaza today, the conflict affects not only communities in Gaza or the Israel, it affects the sub-national or national levels. They have an impact on Arab states or Arab region, and also many people indicate the linkages between the conflict in Gaza and the conflict in Ukraine or their impact global. So it is very important to think about the conflict and to take action for peace at the different governance level. So how we can do it in reality? So let me share my experience in Northeast Nigeria, which has been facing a conflict with Boko Haram. The UNDP launched its stabilization program there. This is for the establishing the foundation of peace by implementing multi-sectoral interventions like security, basic infrastructure, and livelihood with speed and scale and strengthening governance. We focus on the state level or sub-national level governance, bringing up the state legitimacy through the social contract and the people's trust to the state government. Why we focus on the state level governance? Because the violence by Boko Haram happened mainly in three states in the northeast Nigeria. The conflict against the Boko Haram did not spread nationwide in Nigeria. However, that the conflict went beyond the border, beyond the Nigeria, and that spread across the countries around the Lake Chad, which are the basically four countries: Nigeria, Chad, Niger, and Cameroon. So UNDP designed our stabilization program for Lake Chad regions, covering these four countries with a common strategic approach with a multi-level governance focus. The focus on the regional or cross-country and state-level governance in the four countries was very effective because this approach gives an opportunity to bring together the key stakeholders that are the most affected by the conflict. As part of the stabilization efforts, the governance forum with the states affected by Boko Haram conflict in these four countries have been started. And then now that the governance forum held every year, this the forum helped the actors at the states, also the national and the regional level actors to jointly establish the common vision and action to restore the peace in that region. This also enabled the state actors to take actions across the border. So one of the important things to address the peace at the multi-level governance is to identify the level of governance you focus, and then also identify the linkages between the different governance level, and then also you harness them. That's what Jan talked about, the toolkit. This kind of the tool will help us to identify these the governance level to focus and then linkages. Actually, this is more art than science. It's just saying easy and doing it difficult, because every violence and the conflict is different and unique. And we have to tailor a multiple governance approaches to meet the specificity of each conflict. And then that's the toolkit Jan talked about will help us to do that. And then also I'd like to add to say, in addition to this solid analysis of the conflict and actors, the constructive consultation with many stakeholders at the different levels, and the proper designing of the actions and the creating opportunity for engagement at the different governance level, that's the very important for the peace. That's what UNDP is doing all over the world, using our global knowledge and experiences. And then I believe that my colleague Federica also give the listeners the more examples. Over to you, Pérez.
Thank you so much, Mizuho, for this fascinating input with a focus on your work in the Lake Chad region, and for also connecting to some of the tools that Jan was talking about before that we are including in this upcoming MLG toolkit. Now, Federica, let me turn to you. You're leading UNDP support to the community security and recovery working groups in Ukraine. And I'd like to ask you, in your experience, what considerations have you given to the issue of multi-level governance in Ukraine in relation to these efforts? Over to you.
Thank you very much, Bennett, for inviting me and for giving me an opportunity to shine a light on the work the UNDP is doing in Ukraine and to connect it to the research that Michael shared and talked about, the toolkit that Ian has detailed, but also the global UNDP experience that has been fleshed out by Mizuho. Now, I want to start with a word of caution. What I'm going to talk about is not definitely the only example or the first mechanism that has been ever adopted to foster participatory and inclusive approaches to local governance for community development. I do believe that this is one of the longest running in Ukraine and, in my opinion, one of the most interesting. So our MLG experiment starts back in 2017 in conflict areas in the east of Ukraine, and it's part of an area-based programming in conflict-affected region. So what I'm talking about must be read within the context of a wider program that is articulated along three strategic directions. One that looks at economic restoration of productive infrastructure and support to economic life, support to local governance and the decentralization process that is ongoing in Ukraine, and our part about community security and social cohesion. So the key tool that we employ is what we used to call the Community Security and Social Cohesion Working Group, which was born as an inclusive and participatory platform that brings together local authorities, private sector, civil society, youth groups, and representatives of the groups that are most at risk of being marginalized in a community, and functions as a dialogue and advisory body that looks at local development challenges to find local solutions to it. It's a powerful tool that supports better relations and mutual understanding between community groups and strengthen the social compact between citizens and the state. Now, of course, when we talk about development challenges or recovery challenges, not all of them can be addressed at community level. So a tool that was initially designed to work at the level of a community was in fact adapted, and networks were created at regional level, so one level up. The networks that bring together representatives of the working groups at community level have a chance to directly influence regional policymaking and regional service provision. So they have much more clout to discuss and find solutions to problems that are cross-cutting or that affect more than one community. So this is the state of play. We fast forward to February last year, the beginning of the full-scale invasion to Ukraine, and the shift that happens in Ukraine from a development perspective to humanitarian priorities. So our advisory bodies at community and regional level now become focal points for locally led response. So they become so much more executive and directly engage in assessments, in fundraising, in distribution of time-critical assistance, including through volunteer hubs that are created by the communities themselves. So they really are the engine behind supporting connection and assistance, not only to communities that are on the front line of war affected, but also the communities in their experience of displacement, because they remain the focal point that brings the displaced population from a certain community in contact with the wider community. So this goes on over the course of 2022. We fast forward to where we stand now today, as Ukraine focuses increasingly on recovery and paving the way for the planning of the reconstruction and the return to development pathways. This process is, of course, essentially government-led at different levels. So we have a national level, a regional level, and a community level. But in order to be sustainable and fair, it must be participating by the whole of the community, making sure that no one is left behind indeed. So what happens to our working groups today is that they change their vision and the scope of work, transforming from community security and social cohesion working groups to community security and recovery working groups. So they have expanded the scope of work, and we have also multiplied the efforts. From the original four regions where we were working, we are now covering 11, soon to be 12 different regions. The working groups are gradually returning to their originally advisory function, and we're doing work to connect them to the government-led recovery planning processes as a platform that can advocate for, implement, but also monitor the recovery process while bringing to the fore the needs of those groups that are most at risk of being left behind in this process. We're talking elderly people, for example, or people with disability, or people in displacement that are looking to integrate in host communities, people that are returning of their area of origins and need to reestablish their lives and their livelihoods where they come from, or also just as important, women and men demobilizing from the front lines and their family members that need to transition from, again, a military identity to a civilian identity. And together with the enlargement of their scope of work, also the ambitions of these working groups are growing, and the appetite that they have to be able to connect to national level policymaking. So in a few weeks here in Ukraine, we're going to have our annual networking event. There will be an opportunity to present these working groups, these tools, these methods that we have piloted since 2017 in Ukraine to the different line ministries and national level authorities that are engaged in designing the recovery program in the process in Ukraine, and to present them as an instrument and an essential tool for recovery and development planning. And the reason why we're doing this is not just to experiment with the ability of the working groups to influence national level policies. For us, we see it a little bit as a do or die or effort, because we strongly believe that if the working groups or this system MLG experiment in governance do not become firmly anchored in governance systems that are national, regional, or local in nature, and if they do not become of the way things are normally done in Ukraine, these platforms may not be sustainable over time. We may be losing an essential tool for participatory governance systems that has been proven to be extremely effective in bringing people together around a certain shared issues and on finding a local solution and a locally led solution to it. So this is what we are working on lately and what the next steps that we are planning. And once again, thank you very much, Pelle, for giving us this opportunity to present that to you and to, again, shine a light on a very interesting tool for MLG in Ukraine. Over to you.
Thank you, Federica, for sharing your experiences from Ukraine. And I think it's an excellent note to finish on this. The potential of multi-level governance approaches to strengthening participatory governance and some of the elements that we know are at the root of crisis recovery and identifying, promoting sustainable development pathways in difficult settings. I want to thank all of you for contributing today. We have heard a few different country experiences. We've heard how they evolve with evolving with changing context in the countries where you have where you've worked, where you've promoted multi-level innovative multi-level governance approaches. We've heard about the importance of identifying entry points, identifying linkages, strengthening both the vertical and the horizontal dimensions of MLG, especially in this context where scale and speed is of the essence. We have before that heard a bit about these upcoming tools that we have developed over the past couple of years, both on a lessons learned review, which is intended to address this need that we have seen to strengthen the conceptual framework around multi-level governance, strengthen definitions, identify not just one definition, but define different types of MLG. We have heard a bit about a lot about the tools, the toolkit, which aim at being practical and adaptable, not just to support structures, governance structures, but really to identify and address the instances that offer opportunities to to work both in more problem-driven ways and in ways that that strengthen different levels of governance systems. Those both of those products, the lessons learned review and the toolkit, are upcoming. I want to finish with a small call to action from our side, from UNDP and our partners, which is a call for you listeners to share, to think about and share your ideas and perspectives in the comments, and with ourselves as the not just as organizers of this podcast, but also as UNDP and our global reach. We will set up a small space on what we call Spark Blue, which is a community engagement platform. So on sparkblue.org, and there will be a link in connection with on the space of this podcast. Our questions for you are, what are your suggestions for making multi-level governance more effective? How do governance institutions at different levels collaborate with each other in your country? And finally, do you have any examples where multi-level governance contributed to crisis management, peace building, and recovery? With that, I close the podcast for today. Again, I want to thank all of you who participated today, and I finish with this small message from Geneva Peace Week.
You've been listening to the Geneva Peace Week podcast series. For more content like this, join us at the Geneva Peace Week or online at www.genevapeaceweek.ch.